You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
Anna Celia Dinnerstein is an associate professor of sociology at the University of Bath, where she has researched on autonomous movements and social emancipation, particularly in Latin America. So, Anna Celia, you have 15, 20 minutes.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Thanks for coming to this session, providing that we are competing with the market next door. I'm happy you came here to listen to the social movements. I am a political sociologist, but also I have a foot on international development and in political economy. This is a new audience, and I hope I can contribute to the discussion. And my interest in social and solidarity economy comes from social movements, struggle for emancipation and autonomy in Latin America. I had an ESRC, Economic Social Research Council project on that, and I'm writing a book on the dilemmas of autonomy, and many people in the gender, particularly in the gender panel, were discussing that, so I hope to contribute to that. And I'm focused on the political processes, movement struggles in and against and beyond the state. And I will refer to an issue that I haven't heard much in this conference, which is the use of state violence and repression, and is all part of policy implementation. And we haven't talked much about the struggles for the social and solidarity economy. So first I'm going to present... Oh, I need that, don't I? Oh. Sorry, I thought it was there. First, I'm going to present a problem, a concern, and then I'm going to analyze processes or some examples. Obviously, I'm not going to be able to go into detail about the examples that I've been working on, but you can always ask afterwards, because I like to present ideas. Thank you. And then I am going to present some kind of a epistemological, methodological proposal, which I hope can contribute to the debate on social and solidarity economy. There is a growing interest within international organizations and governmental institutions in obtaining support from social movements and social solidarity economy organizations for new public policies and laws that encourage their engagement and participation from below, and obviously facilitate their access to new policy schemes. And the significance of this consideration is in underscoring the growing importance of civil society actors in rethinking development and in devising and effecting development policy, particularly in periods of global crisis like the present. So during the past two decades, civil society organizations, social movements, and popular organizations, particularly in the global south, have been experimenting with non-profit forms of production and from cooperative production, distribution, land occupation, all the things that we've been discussing here so far. Many of these movements belong to national and transnational networks. And then they have caught the attention of the alternative development paradigm. This is not recent, but the last, I would say, 10 years, which is people-centered development and is inspiring policy, particularly World Bank, for example, funded community-driven development policies, encouraging associated forms of production, sustainable development, access to land and housing, promoting women's empowerment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what, while I don't oppose to this, I find that there is something very problematic, and this is what I'm going to talk about, that many movements repudiate the growth development model altogether, and we have not paid enough attention to that, and I think we need to provide a space to discuss this further. Many believe that human realization cannot be attained by means of improving the management of capitalism and the distribution of wealth, as Gudinas and Esteva argue, and many movements are for, as has been mentioned, buen vivir, which is a different paradigm. And this is not only in Latin America, but this is happening worldwide. For example, I just brought some citations here. We strongly believe we not only that another world is possible, but also that it's increasingly necessary. Manifesto, the European Network of Social and Solidarity Economy in Barcelona, 2011. This is the next one is from Comandante Marcos in Chiapas. In our dreams, we have seen another world, an honest world, a world decidedly more fair than the one which now live. The CSC is not an economy of repair, but the construction of a new worldview and applicable alternatives to neoliberal economic devastation. That's from Ripes. SSC is in various forms throughout the world, represents an alternative to the global capitalist system. So what we are talking here really is not simply, as you know, they argue, economy of repair, but something else. So this is something else that is in the hidden in the title of my presentation that I want to discuss. Basically, in a nutshell, what these movements are against, what Gudenus calls the dream of benevolent capitalism. So what do we do with that? So my concern is that when the social solidarity economy practices, considering in a wide way, yeah, cooperatives and other forms of projects, community projects and forms of solidarity, is appropriated and translated into policy, then what happens is that it's a cooptation or subordination or a subjugation of the emancipatory force of the social solidarity economy to the logic of power, the state, and capital, and growth. And that produces a breach which is becoming wider and wider between the new realities and agendas created by social movements and the ways the social and social economy inspired policy is organized. And this is a problem. And by translation, I mean political, legal, and policy mechanisms and dynamics through which the state incorporates the cooperative and solidarity ethos of the social and solidarity economy practiced by social movements, perhaps in an attempt to support them. But then what the state does is to demarcate a terrain that renders invisible anything that doesn't really fit into the reality or the capitalist reality. And I am using this vocabulary of translation and demarcation, citing Vasquez, that they do work on epistemic violence of modernity, where you know there is a demarcation of what is visible and invisible. And so there is something that is not being said or being visible. So he calls this translation as erasure. And in my view, and this is going to be my argument, this form of translation de-radicalizes and depoliticizes the movements, eradicates the hope for a post-capitalist world, disregards alternative economic possibilities, impoverishes social and economic, social SSC, I'm going to say, inspired policy. And basically, the movements, the social movements drive for democratization and social justice get lost in translation. So in Latin America, I'm not going to provide the background, has been the privileged site for neoliberal reforms, as Sader argues, and also a political laboratory of resistance against that. But my proposal is that, or my idea, and this is what I am writing in my book, is that SSC has expand as a tool for organizing hope. And by organizing hope, I don't mean a wish for a better future or utopian fantasy, but it's a practice that enables people to anticipate alternatives in the present. Basically, it's about organizing something that we don't know what it is, which is pretty difficult, I think. And the idea of hope comes from the philosopher Ernst Bloch, who suggests that the realist process and the present reality contains within it a hidden dimension, a dimension he calls the not yet become. A reality that doesn't contain that, the not yet become, is not real enough. So basically, when we have the capitalist realism where things that don't fit into that logic are outside, that's not real reality. It's something that is oppressing, a reality that people are experiencing in their local communities or elsewhere. So my point would be that we need to, and also the translation includes in this process, obviously, particularly in Latin America and the global south, I would say, ideological and physical coercion, cooptation, intimidation, depoliticization, and direct state violence. So in my examples that I will give quickly, there are a massacre in each example, and I call massacre violent repression. It could be two people, one or 20, it doesn't matter. So when we look at the present moment in Latin America, we know that we have the pink tide government. My view is that even when these governments are taking on board or representing the idea of buen vivir or facilitating self-determination, which seems a contradiction in terms, but encouraging self-organization and self-management of social movements and other organizations, the tensions, as Professor Coraggio mentioned yesterday, are not gone. Actually became worse because the movement feel that they have much more to say to this government that are representing them. And particularly because the promotion of social and solidarity economy comes together with an intensification of extractivism and changes in energy and agrarian policies that are affecting rural livelihoods and indigenous communal life on behalf of transnational corporations. And everybody who does work in Latin America knows that in Argentina we depend on, I am Argentinian by the way, we depend on five transnational corporations of the soya complex in order to survive. So in all cases, more or less the same. So the idea is to give some examples now. I'm talking about the contentious politics surrounding translation, but I like to discuss untranslatability. I don't want to get stuck in the conflicts and describe how terrible the government is or the state is with the movements. We all know that more or less. But I like to discuss what is outside that space, that the delimitation of the state delimits the terrain, and I call the beyond zone. So I have here three examples. I'm not going to go into detail, but I have also Bolivia and Ecuador. But this is the Zapatistas in Mexico, and they illustrate the problem of indigenous movements and autonomy. The movement of the unemployed workers in Argentina, the piqueteros, is urban movements, unemployment, and the problem of work. And the movement of the landless rural workers in Brazil, rural movements and the problem of land and agrarian reform. And in order to analyze what happened with these movements, I devised these SSC visible zones, as I call them. So we have a creative zone. Obviously, I didn't include the conflict, but you know, all these endeavors come from a moment of intense mobilization and resistance. A creative zone with where the movements articulate the alternatives. Then it's a conflict zone when they somehow had to confront the state capital and discourses of development. And a third zone, the translation zone, when their activities or their what they are demanding or their, the interaction of, or their own endeavors are transforming to policy. So what I want to point out is that in this, the creative zone are like territories of hope. At some, they are not outside anything, so obviously the interaction comes. And what is happening is that it is a struggle over the meaning of social solidarity economy. I call it autonomy, but I found really interesting that I can call it SSC as well. Yeah. So what does it mean? Quickly, in the case of the Zapatistas, yeah, they fight for indigenous autonomy, and they ended up having free municipalities in Chiapas. As a result of that, they rejected the legislation in the Constitution of 2001, and they remain self-government by the creation of the good government councils and the SNES, where they deliver justice, health, and education. In the case of the piqueteros, they created cooperatives, community productive projects, solidarity work in the neighborhoods. There is a struggle over the meaning of work in that case, and we end up with policies that support the cooperatives, but and also we have a criminalization of poverty and a massacre against one of the groupings of the movement, and there is an NGOization of the movement. They had to become NGOs, so there's a depoliticization in order to become beneficiaries of the policies. And in the case of the MST in Brazil, the struggle for agrarian reform has a very specific connotation. It's a different thing with different values, a different form of cooperation. They struggle for agrarian reform. In the end, in the translation, they get some kind of piecemeal distribution of the land, but food sovereignty is not there. So what I'm proposing in this final bit of the paper is, how can we engage with this other reality? So the question we need to pose, again, following Vasquez, is, the possibility of translation begs for the question of untranslatability. What is that remains untranslatable and outside the scope of translation? And I think it is important when we discuss the emancipatory power of social and solidarity economy. The movements are creating alternative realities, but these are rendered invisible by capitalist realism. So how to render visible what has been produced as non-existent, as de Sousa Santos argues. So the challenge is to engage with the beyond zone and requires an effort to transcend the capitalist reality. So I added another zone. So we got the three, and I added the beyond zone. And there is when we find, as Gibson Graham argued, the surplus possibilities, alternatives, where if not outside, I would argue that this is the place where, and talking about political economy, the law of value and capital is confronted by hope. We, at that particular moment, that is not outside, but it's a space that is somewhere there, we deconstruct the logic of capitalism as subjectivities. We deconstruct ourselves and do something else. Obviously, perhaps it's an instant, a moment, or I don't find the right word to describe it. So if we have another aspect included there, the beyond zone, as an invisibilized surplus, we see that it's not free municipality what the Zapatistas wanted. They wanted self-autonomy, and this is about buen vivir, non-representational politics, direct democracy, and so on. In the case of the piqueteros, it's about self-management, but also dignified work, which is not the same as decent work. And also in the case of the MST in Brazil, we're talking about food sovereignty, new forms of education on new basis or new values, and not just distribution of the land. So two more ideas. First, I think because I work in social movements that there might be a shift in paradigm as how we conceive social movements, and that this is relevant for SSC. In the sense that I don't think the movements are simply protesting, mobilizing, lobbying, or advocating any longer. They are prefiguring the not yet become. And then there is a transition, perhaps, from claim-making to alternative creation roles. And if that is the case, then we really need to look at, you know, the way we consider for policy implementations, for example, from the perspective of policymakers, what is the role of the social movement? You know, they are simply to put demands on the state. They are creating other worlds. And then if this is the case, then what we need is another kind of translation. And, you know, my proposal would be that we need a prefigurative translation. And that prefigurative translation needs to problematize factual reality. This is what it is. It has to be something else. So it's really a kind of operationalizing another world is possible. And represent, suggest, imagine in advance, and learn from the movements. Alternatives, not alternative development, but alternatives to development, and contribute to some kind of collective intelligence or, you know, as Santo suggests, the work of epistemological, and I would add ethical as well, and democratic imagination. So in this new approach, in the prefigurative translation, there is a true engagement with the emancipatory dimension of SSC. Let's push it and let's see what is it that they are really, or we are really saying. And then is it possible from there to establish a strong connection between the realities and the agendas created by the movements and SSC-inspired policy? So obviously, faced with this problem, Gibson Graham again advised that as a practice of theorizing, we need one that tolerates not knowing. And this is a problem because we want certainties. On the other hand, we had to relax because we are inventing a world and organizing something that does not yet exist and allows for contingent connections and highness of unfolding, they argue. One that the same time foregrounds specificity, diversion, incoherence, surplus possibility. So in that respect, I will leave you with Ernst Bloch, my favorite citation, perhaps the last sentence. Hope is a work, the work of this emotion requires people who throw themselves actively into what is becoming to which they themselves belong. Thank you.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unris.org. Thank you for listening.